Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. I wish you and your family a very happy family day coming up, as well as Valentine's Day and Washington's birthday for our friends in the U.S.
And happy Chinese New Year for those who celebrate.
Oh, very nice. When is that happening?
Next week.
Very good. Are you going to go out for dinner?
Yeah. So it's a family event and you meet with family.
Nothing. Sometimes you love them, sometimes you hate them, but it's nice to have family and it's nice to do this podcast for you. And we got some exciting stuff to talk about today. We want to talk about the Investor Day about Alimentation Couche-Tard that Ernest attended in person. He'll talk about his experience. He also got to test some of the new food that the company has. So we're excited to hear that. We also want to cover Ferrari, where its stock has been roaring back. And of course, but before we get into that, we'll certainly want to talk about the general market anxiety that's been happening over the last few weeks. It's shocking to us because the fundamental earnings of our companies is very good, but the market is really getting nervous about AI and how it's going to disrupt the world going forward. So we'll get into that. But before we get into that, let's get into this. If you like this podcast, of course, please subscribe to us on YouTube, on Apple, and on Spotify. Please give your 5-star reviews, please comments, feedback. And if you have any interest in Baskin Wealth Management for your portfolio, you want to have a portfolio review, please reach out to us. Go to our website at baskinwealth.com and you can find out more. We've been managing money for clients for well over 30 years and we've lived through, Ernest, so much disruption, ups and downs, worries that the world's going to end. And, the more things change, the more things stay the same pretty much. And so I think the principles of investing will stick around longer than we will. So, even though Warren Buffett has retired, Mark Leonard has retired, we'll find new and great mentors to follow in the markets as the markets pivot and adapt. So I'm sure a lot of our clients, a lot of you following the markets have been watching what's going on every day. It seems that AI is causing worries about a lot of different sectors and industries. It's impacted software, it's impacted data providers, it's impacted insurance brokerage, it's impacted in commercial brokerage now, truck brokerage, really anything where humans have the knowledge or the competitive advantage of that knowledge and using it to help other companies, businesses outsource, what have you. I guess the worry, the concern is that AI will replace all white-collar jobs and displace all knowledge and service industries, as you will just ask the AI to get that information and do everything for you. It seems like an easy cop-out. and of course, this is what markets do. They get worried about different industries, different events. We remember when the internet came along, a lot of retailers got pummeled, right? And when Amazon announced that they were going to enter into a lot of different industries, companies got beaten up. The great companies, the great ones will survive. And so what we're trying to do with our portfolio is look again, trust our research. And at the moment, we haven't seen any fundamental impacts from our companies. In fact, their companies are doing better than we expected. But, this is what happens in markets. It's completely volatile, and we just have to ignore the short term. The last thing we want to do is outsource our research to a stock price. And what I mean by that is the stock keeps going down. And obviously, if it keeps going down, everybody thinks it's lousy. The market thinks it's lousy. So why trust your own research? Just listen to the market and get rid of it. That's the opposite of what we do. We stick with high quality businesses. We're not momentum chasers, Ernest. So we tend to buy companies that look attractive to us on valuation. Maybe they're suffering through a lousy period. Maybe their industry is facing a narrative, as long as the fundamentals are improving and we can see potentials for good returns just on fundamentals alone, we're excited to buy the company. And as long-term investors, you don't chase what's working today. You try and buy what you hope will be working over the next 3 to 5 years. And so I hope that explains a little bit about how we're thinking of it. And I want to get Ernest's take and of course, his thoughts on the current market anxiety as well.
Yeah, so when the market is kind of indiscriminately selling off everything due to whether it's macro fears in 2020 or tariffs last year or AI today, I think the one thing that we often like to do here is kind of examine the portfolio that we have and the names that we don't own and see if there's any opportunity for us to upgrade the portfolio.
Yeah.
To buy companies that we like and are now trading at more attractive valuations than the stuff that we own.
That's right. And so like we're actively looking at other software and data provider companies. We may or may not pull the trigger, but those are the ones that are attractive to us. And, you know, as long as we don't see the disruption in the fundamentals, we have to take a look at them.
Yeah. And one other thing that I think it's important to note is that when you are picking stocks, it has to fit into a portfolio. Mm-hmm. Where at our style here at Baskin Wealth is that we own about 30 stocks. And what we try to do here is that those 30 companies generally participate in different sectors of the economy and are, you know, subject to different economic factors versus the other names in the portfolio. So some of the names, there's worries about AI. Other names like Canadian Natural Resources are at kind of record highs today, mm-hmm. because they're just fundamentally different companies. And that's what we try to do when we're constructing the portfolio is look for things that we currently don't have.
Does this period remind you of the pandemic when everybody made the assumption we're going to be in our houses and we're never going to go to hotels anymore and we're never going to go to the movies or to go to concerts or go to restaurants and all those stocks, the initial reaction was horrific, right? We owned Delta Airlines at the time. We owned Hyatt Hotels at the time. Those stocks fell 40, 50, 60%. And rightly so. Right? Because the market doesn't move on BS. It moves on actual concerns. But things changed. The world pivoted. How is this time any different than that where, yeah, AI is going to disrupt everything and you can't own anything where an AI can do it for you?
Right. And I think it's on the one hand, you have to be humble about the kind of pace of technology that is seeming to get faster and faster every day, mm-hmm. while recognizing that narratives can often be wrong. And we've seen that time and time again, even in the last like 5 years,
yeah.
where you mentioned COVID, where the consensus was that, you know, people were always going to work from home again. Offices were dead.
Kind of right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
People we're never going to shop in physical retail again, even to the extent that COVID ended.
That was wrong.
One thing, like we'll get into it about Couche-Tard, but mm-hmm. electric cars. There was unanimous consensus that electric cars were going to take over gas cars.
That's right.
Right. And
look at General Motors stock at an all-time high.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It had no EVs. Wrote down all its EVs to near zero.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think what I'm trying to say is that predicting the future is very, very hard. And oftentimes, like the general consensus about what is going to happen may not actually be how it plays out.
What's interesting about this, comparing it to the pandemic, of course, is the pandemic was an event where companies literally had no revenues when you couldn't go out, right? So hotels, no one's booking anything. If airlines, no, not happening. Restaurants, concerts, not happening. And those companies like were facing an existential crisis. Either the world recovers or they're going to go bankrupt.
Right.
Right. They can pivot and do online stuff, but a hotel is never going to,
right.
Yeah, it's never going to change its business. What's happening right now is you're just not seeing the AI impact for a lot of S&P 500 companies even though there's the disruption worries, right? And it's not like AI has come out of nowhere. We've been living with this for a couple of years now. So we've seen a lot of software companies report earnings, Microsoft, for example, where double-digit revenue growth, you know, saying everything is fantastic, and yet the market takes it down 20%+ because of those narratives. Those narratives can be reversed very, very quickly. We've seen it time and time again.
So one thing that I like to, one angle that I think people often don't think about with regards to these kinds of things is the incentives. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think it's a very useful kind of framework to think about whether a company is likely to get disrupted or not. So let's take the credit rating agencies, for example. Moody's, S&P, mm-hmm. Morningstar to some extent.
Mm-hmm. All have suffered lately, yep. Even though the results have been pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. There's the worry is that AI is going to disrupt the credit rating agencies, right? And I've read some of the reasoning online about why that's the case. And I think if you just take a step back and think about why these companies exist and kind of the incentives that drive the business model of providing credit ratings, it's just very hard to imagine a world where they get displaced by an AI-related solution. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that the reason why Moody's and S&P are so dominant in what they provide is that the credit rating lowers funding costs for the company. Mm-hmm. Because investors see the Moody's and S&P credit rating, they trust the AA rating from the credit rating agency research.
It's a stamp of approval. It's the book of record.
And yeah. As a result, are willing to lend to companies at a lower interest rate than mm-hmm. they otherwise would be.
You and I can create our own credit rating agency right now.
Right.
All you need is financial statements yeah. and research. You may not even need analysts anymore because you can get all the research from AI and say this company's balance sheet is A, B, or C. But does anybody care what we think?
And then there's an entire ecosystem built really on Moody's and S&P credit ratings. Mm-hmm. So the fixed income ETF space, almost all credit investors are kind of relying on these credit ratings. And so there's just no incentive for either the issuer or investors to adopt another standard.
Fascinating.
Versus even to the extent that you have an AI-powered solution that is able to replicate most of the research. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So as you can tell, we're, you know, obviously when the market goes down and our stocks report good results and we feel good about them, if the stocks go down, it's frustrating for everybody. And there's no amount of words I can say to anybody because if you're watching the results every day, that's going to be your yay or nay sign, right? But you have to be patient and you have to let things play out. And so many times, and we've given you so many examples on this podcast before of businesses that were considered losers or they're going to be disrupted, where either the narrative was false or the business pivoted or what have you, right? And no question, we're going to get some of these wrong, right? Look at the pandemic. If you bet on the fact that no one was going to return to offices anymore, that was a pretty good bet. Take a look at a stock called Allied Properties, yes. for example. But if you bet on no one ever going to hotels anymore, that was a bad bet, right? And so when markets fall, sometimes the concerns are legit, but it doesn't mean it's material to the long term for these companies. So that's all we got to say on that. We're just going to continue to follow the fundamentals and we're not going to let AI rule the world in terms of our trying to figure out what's going to happen next, of course. You know, if you believe that AI is going to disrupt everything, I don't know what you want to own at all. And you can see a scenario where if AI takes over all white collar jobs, who's going to have money for anything? So what stocks are going to work then?
Right.
Don't know. Anyways, enough with that morbid take. Let's talk about some positive stuff. We did have some positive news and we're very excited to share it. Couche-Tard, Alimentation Couche-Tard stock hit a multi-year high, 52-week high recently. This was a company where we've done a number of podcasts on. At one point, they're trying to acquire 7-Eleven in Japan. They were going to blow up the balance sheet to do it. Ernest and I were actually very excited for that potential deal to happen. Didn't happen anyways. The stock took a kick in. The stock fell to about mid-$60 range. Now it's well above 80 based on the results of its investor day. And we'll also get into Ferrari. Its stock is not back to its all-time high, of course, but the stock has seriously recovered after reporting better results than that the market was looking for, or at least not worse. So, Ernest, you attended the Couche Tard Investor Day in person. Where was it? What was the event like, and what did you learn, and what did you eat?
So it was in downtown Toronto in a fairly small conference room full of mostly sell-side analysts. Mm-hmm. Originally, we weren't allowed to go, but I think one of the IR people watched our videos on
IR
YouTube.
IR means investor relations, yeah. Right?
So one of the investor relations people saw our videos and saw that we were more likely to say something nice rather than mean about the company.
And we are. They're not wrong, because we are saying positive. You show me the results, and if they're good, I'll say positive things.
And so we got an invitation.
Yeah.
And so I think to kind of provide a backdrop of this investor day, let's go back to 2023. Which was the last investor day. See, the then CEO, Brian Hannasch, he stood up. Couche Tard had done pretty well through the pandemic.
Yes, it was a big beneficiary from the pandemic, for sure, when everything was closed.
And so he laid out kind of his vision and his plan for Couche Tard to achieve $10 billion in EBITDA by 2028.
Versus what?
Versus what it was at the time.
Okay, so
it was a very ambitious goal. Double, basically.
Double, okay.
And then 6 months later, he quit, right? So
you and I were looking at our, I remember we pretty much bought the stock around the mid $70 range after the investor day. And then we saw Hannasch quit, and we're like, what? That's not a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah. So 6 months later, he quit. The chief operating officer at the time, Alex Miller, he was promoted to the CEO. Mm-hmm. And the stock has not worked since then, right? There's been, some of it's been macro, poor, lower income consumer, pullback in kind of government food benefits.
Yeah, the results for a good chunk of 24 and half of 25 were not robust.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and then the CEO, I think, was kind of a relatively unknown entity among investors. Mm-hmm. And so, and then you have the 7-Eleven acquisition attempt, which was kind of a big overhang on the entire company at the
nobody
time.
Nobody liked it. Right. No, not they beat it up in the press. The Japanese didn't like it. Analysts didn't like it. So
I think that was kind of the backdrop for them to do this investor event, mm-hmm. where number one, it was an opportunity for the CEO, for Alex Miller, to kind of tell people who he is. And secondly, how he sees the company going forward. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that's why when he began, it was really, who is Alex Miller? He's like, he grew up in the US, he's married with three daughters, stuff like that, right? And I think the second part then becomes, how does he plan to operate the business going forward?
What is his view versus Brian's view years ago when they set ambitious targets that clearly not going to reach?
Especially because Alimentation Couche Tard, historically, I think the perception is that this is a roll-up. So it's a company that grows primarily through acquisition. And so in the absence of 7-Eleven, what's the management going to do? Are they going to keep going and pursuing new deals? Are they going to focus more on kind of implementing, like adding stores organically? Like, what's the plan?
Yeah.
Right. And so I think that was kind of the focus of the presentation, where 100% the theme for the investor day was, we're going to focus on operating the stores well. Not that we're not going to go do deals, but we are going to operate the stores, the existing footprint that we have.
Okay, how are they going to do that? That's an easy thing to say. Right. What are the tangibles that is going to get the store performance?
Right, improved? And so some of this is just kind of the nitty-gritty of retailing, where it's like we're going to provide better store displays. We're going to add loyalty program. We're going to reorganize some of the ways we put things in the store. We're going to add food. I think there was quite a bit of
hot food.
I think there was quite a bit of explaining about what lessons they learned on their journey towards implementing food.
Did they just get, because the results were so good after the pandemic or due to the pandemic, kind of just like, our business is cooking, we don't need to do anything? And then
I think part of it is that one of the biggest initiatives that the company has undertook was to rebrand everything to Circle K. Mm-hmm. Because I think before that point, I don't remember the exact year they did that, but before that, it was just a bunch of disparate chains, right? And so there's been a very big undertaking to kind of stitch them all together under a common brand, under a common kind of customer experience, under like to centralize the fuel procurement and the in-store merchandise purchasing.
That all makes sense. It's all seems common sense, right? Yeah.
And so, especially given the fact that they've also done a couple big deals lately, so there was quite a bit of talking about the lessons they've learned mm-hmm. on integrating various acquisitions, on adding food and why it didn't succeed, on their lessons in private label and why that didn't succeed. Mm-hmm. And so some of this is, well, this is what didn't work and this is what we're going to do now.
Okay.
And then I think the other thing that was kind of de-emphasized was no M&A. Mm-hmm. Right, like not no M&A, but there was no slides. There was only one slide on deals and the opportunities they see with deals. Right, the theme that they wanted to set for the presentation is the plan that we have today is 100% in our control. It's not reliant on us going and doing deals. It's not reliant on macro improving. It is stuff that we can do to drive growth within the existing business.
And if it works, our same store sales will grow, our merchandise sales will grow, and because we generate so much free cash flow, we're going to buy back a ton of stock instead of making M&A,
right.
And that should lead to double-digit earnings growth for the foreseeable future.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think what I described might seem a little boring, but I think
I'm still awake.
In retail, I think there's a cliche, retail is detail.
Yeah.
Right? Where what matters at the retail level, like success for a company like Couche-Tard, is getting the little things right within the store, because what ultimately is going to make the company successful is whether people are coming to your stores versus other stores.
Anything in the presentation or the investor day that gave you more confidence about the future of Couche-Tard?
Yeah, so I think there were two things that were kind of previously viewed as potential headwinds for the company that they actually say are tailwinds. Mm-hmm. So number one is EVs, to the extent that EVs, right? So I think if we go back to COVID, the big question that everybody had for the gas station industry is, what happens if EVs come?
Yeah.
And are they all dead?
You don't need to buy gas, but you still need the charge. But if you buy gas, maybe you go in and buy some nicotine products or an energy drink or candy or hot food. But if you charge your car at home, you never need to stop at a convenience store.
Right.
Yeah.
And now I think in North America, EV adoption has kind of slowed.
Clearly.
In the absence of government subsidies to purchase electric cars. But what Couche-Tard is seeing in Scandinavia, for instance, is that EV penetration is EVs are totally dominant in places like Norway. Mm-hmm. Like almost all new cars sold today in Norway are electric cars, and they have a large gas station footprint in Norway. Mm-hmm. And interestingly, what they're seeing is that they're actually making more money from EVs as they are from gas cars, mm-hmm. because number one, you still need to charge your car. People are generally staying longer when they're charging the car, so they're spending more at the store. Mm-hmm. And the customers are more loyal when they're more loyal to the brand of the electric charger versus gas station.
But the Couche-Tard footprint they don't have restaurants. And like, unlike some of their other competitors, if you go charge your EV, you want to sit down for, even if you use a Tesla supercharger, it still takes 20 minutes.
Right.
So you want to go into a fast food place or something and sit down. How does Circle K circle that square, so to speak? And
no, so I think
offering better food, I guess.
Yeah. Offering better food, but mm-hmm. the approach that they're taking is...
You can still eat in your car, I guess.
Yeah, the approach that they're taking is that they want to... They're not still not sure exactly when electric cars are going to be dominant in Canada or and the US. And so they want to be a little bit more measured mm-hmm. and make the charging investments when it actually happens. And there's a reason for this, which is that they don't want to ensure... They want to be sure that the charging technology that they have is going to be the one that's actually used. Because what ended up happening to a lot of the legacy charging network that was built in North America is they're simply not suitable for the existing fleet of electric cars that are coming out today.
Very interesting.
So very measured rollout of this, but encouraging for the North American business if a scenario where EVs are dominant.
Fascinating. And so let's quickly move on. So that stock is working. So we got one in the bag. And Ferrari, of course, just reported earnings. If you want to find out about Ferrari, of course, we did a full podcast on the company. I think that podcast has a picture of you in a Ferrari.
Yes.
AI, thanks. But the bottom line is for Ferrari is they're saying, you know, we want to slow the volume growth. But the values of our cars keep going up and we're excited about our new EV. Speaking of EV, that's going to come out eventually. And there's no end to the new Ferraris that we're going to start building and selling over the next number of years. And collectors love them. The demand is still there. And at some point in time, maybe the volume will start to pick up again. Is that kind of the executive summary?
Yeah, I don't think the stock moved pretty well on earnings, but I don't think there was anything that was too completely thesis changing.
No.
Where I think a lot of analysts asked the management, so are you going to update your guidance? And they said, well, we just gave it to you like 3 months ago, mm-hmm. so we're not going to change that today. Mm-hmm. But the business is still sold out through 2027.
You can't get a Ferrari.
Yep.
Yeah.
They are seeing good demand for personalization. So people want to do weird stuff to their Ferraris. And some of the actions that they've taken in places like UK to boost residual values are working.
And they teased, of course, the new EV. I think they're calling it the Luce.
Yes.
Kind of like it means light, whatever. And this was designed by Joni Ive, who was at Apple for many years and helped come out with the designs of a lot of products there. Some people said it looks ridiculous. Some people said it looks amazing. You know, whatever. You can't learn anything from Twitter and anecdotal comments. But they're excited about the EV. And when is that going to be released to the public?
So the full unveil will be in May. Mm-hmm. It's important to note that they haven't started taking orders or even shown the car to clients yet. So we have no details about how that's going to play out. I think they've said very clearly that there's a very large segment of their buyers that said they're never going to buy an electric Ferrari. And they understand that they're not going to push that onto them. But what they hope is that it will unlock a new category of buyer. So people who are, you know, maybe not as attracted to the very loud Ferraris, right? Now maybe, but they're still rich enough to afford one. Hopefully this will attract a new clientele.
We'll have to see. I mean, the evidence of success in luxury EVs has not been great, right? Porsche and Lamborghini, I don't think the results have been fantastic.
Well, I don't think they're great cars either, right?
So there you go.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is a Ferrari creates a must-have product, then the demand will be there.
So, and I think most importantly for Ferrari is that this is a business that's managed for the long run. Mm-hmm. Like they're not there just to sell, to participate in the EV trend because it's kind of the hot thing to do. Although there's regulatory reasons for them to do that, they're really managing the business to ensure that this is a car people are still going to be you know, wanting to display in 40 years.
And one of the ways to do that is obviously to reduce or limit the volume.
Right.
And that's what Ferrari is wonderful at. And it keeps the residual values high. It keeps interest high. But of course, the quality's got to be there and people want to buy the cars. And so I think Ferrari certainly over the last, how long has it been in business? 50, 60, 70 years. I think it's done a good job so far, and we have no concerns about long-term for Ferrari. And even if you're AI, I think you still need to drive.
Yeah, they said they're not going to make a self-driving one.
Sounds good. So that's all we got for you this week, and we'll see you back here real soon. Thank you so much. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.